Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a five-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, all that kind of stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Scored. Cody, it's generally not a good thing when the opposing team is doing the wave on the bench in the fourth quarter.
Fans have lost interest at, is it TD Garden in
TD
Boston?
TD Garden, that's
I believe,
now, yeah.
Because the Celtics ran all over the Bulls in a 100-80 win Sunday afternoon matinee in Boston. That wasn't even 20-point game that the final score indicated, because the Bulls just put together perhaps their most abysmal half of basketball this season, which is probably saying a lot, but the Bulls set the NBA mark for worst scoring first half this season with 26 measly points, which actually the second quarter was an improvement from the 9-point first quarter, in which they went 3 of 22 from the field. Five turnovers, absolutely disastrous day for the Bulls.
But it wasn't the worst scoring first quarter in the league this season. There are four different teams that have scored 8 points in a quarter this year, so the Bulls at least have that going for them.
Yeah, it was a big three-point shot, I think, by Denzel Valentine in the first quarter to ensure that the Bulls didn't have the worst offensive output there. But, again, just it's getting away from those. This is five losses in a row, and it's not just the fact that they have lost. It's the manner in which they're losing. It's extremely problematic right now. They're 31-35, I believe 1.5 games out of the 8 seed in the East now. And we know that the Bucks and Heat are charging hard there in the 8-9 spots.
And the Bulls have a pretty tough schedule coming up.
Yep. I believe Hornets. I know they have the Wizards, Jazz coming up.
Grizzlies.
This week, Grizzlies as well.
Pistons again. Hawks, Cavs.
Just an absolutely embarrassing performance, Sean. And Huey Brown on the national broadcast, mind you, this was ABC's Game of the Week. He didn't hold back. Called him embarrassing. Called him what?
Garbage basketball. That's a direct quote. And this is Huey Brown, who's usually a pretty positive guy. He's not somebody who's just going to go off on teams with that. And he started doing that in the first quarter. They started the game 0-for-12 from the field, and he said, "This is maybe one of the worst displays of shooting that you've seen all season."
It was absolutely abysmal, and the question must be raised: are the Bulls, have they quit? Like, the effort doesn't look like it's there for long stretches. Dwayne Wade got beat on a backdoor by Avery Bradley early in the game, in which he just had his hands on his knees. Bobby Portis was beat backdoor a couple times. There were times where the Bulls, again, I mean, they make a mockery of this space and pace idea, but there was a couple possessions where they'd go down and transition, and it'd be like one guy ramming his way to the hoop and the others on the other side of half court. They're just missing and clanging jump shots. They didn't offensive rebound very well early in this game whatsoever at all. I think the final stats might have made that look a little better and everything. But that's one of, like, when the Bulls are just running over people and throwing bodies on the floor and retrieving, like, 31% of their misses, that's when you know, like, they're kind of engaged.
Right.
And the effort's there. We just didn't see the hallmarks of anything that would suggest the effort was there, even though Hoiberg says the effort's there, the shot-making isn't. Well, that's the understatement of the century, if that's the case. Dwayne Wade says the Bulls haven't quit, but it's to the point now where the question is, have they quit? You know what I mean?
It sure looks like they have. I said that after the game against the Rockets the other day, where they just weren't running back on defense at all, and it just looked like nobody really had any interest in being there, and it's tonight certainly did not do anything to discourage that thought.
Yeah, just a game where no one got anything going, really. Jimmy Butler had 5 points on 2 of 11 shooting. He looked very disengaged. Dwayne Wade, 8 points, 4 of 11 shooting.
Dwayne Wade was a minus 37 in the plus-minus.
And he played 26 minutes?
26 minutes. That's,
I think, plus-minus. Again,
plus-minus doesn't really mean much, but that's impressive.
Yeah, it really is. It's a stat that is so misleading because it deals with who's on the court around you, and you can't control so much of obviously what the other nine guys do. But when it's that bad, sometimes it is truly reflective of exactly what was going on. And that was the case in this game. And the Bulls' spirit right now is just dead. And a couple things struck me on Friday night after they got blasted by the Rockets. They're not mad. They just seem apathetic about everything, and they're still able at times to even like laugh in the post-game locker room. Yeah. I don't know what the scene is in Boston here as we're in Chicago and watched it on TV, but several losses recently after these games, they have just been normal and, you know, expressed some frustration in post-game interviews, but you know, they've had losses early in the year where, like, you could hear a pin drop in the post-game locker room because right. They were mad and
like
upset.
Like, those two Bucks ones in December, the Thibodeau game also in December, some of those other ones.
Yeah, it hasn't felt like that, and that almost makes me think, too, if they've checked out more than just more so here in the last week or two. And the thing is, I don't think the Bulls are good enough to drag themselves out of this rut, and that's a lot... I know we've gone back and forth so many times before the season on you saying the Bulls would just slip into the playoffs, and I said,
I'm out on that now.
Just be out. But yeah, but I'm saying, though, like, part of my thinking early on was, like, this team, certainly a team capable of playing 500 basketball because they have talent, but if they do go through a rut, like, I just don't see this Bulls team having enough shooting or effort to respond to a 5-game losing streak ever with a 4-game winning streak.
Right.
Because they're too inconsistent.
Right, and my thought process the whole year on why I thought they were going to make the playoffs was not because I thought this team was good, but because I just thought that the rest of the East was kind of equally mediocre or worse, especially after, like, Jabari Parker had a torn ACL, so I thought the Bucks were kind of out of it. But if you look at it lately, the Bucks have been playing well, the Heat have been playing well, the Pistons have been playing well, these other teams that are kind of neck and neck with the Bulls in terms of fighting for that 8 seed. I have a lot more confidence in any of those teams right now than I do in the Bulls.
Yeah, I wanted to get some post-game press conference comments from Dwayne Wade, or I should just say media scrum comments that he made.
This was pretty interesting.
Some of the beat reporters, Eric Casey Johnson, Nick Friedel, some of those guys. Dwayne, veiled shot that's actually not really a
it's
veiled
not veiled
shot.
At
just
all.
A shot at upper management. Casey Johnson was clear here that he didn't say it with malice.
No.
Or unprofessionally, but show it to him, Sean.
So this is, he was asked, and this is something that a lot of guys have been asked lately about the Bulls' plan, which they've stated multiple times that their plan is to try to compete in the short term and make the playoffs while still developing some of these young guys. A lot of players have been asked about, you know, whether that can work or whether that's a viable strategy. And here's what Dwayne Wade said tonight after the game. This is from Casey Johnson, who posted the transcript on Twitter. He says, "I don't know. I wish upper management could be answering these questions because I'm tired of answering the same ones every game. I wish I had answers, but I don't. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I want to get out there and try to play and to lead. Find a way for me and Jimmy to be better, to help these guys. We have to look at film and sit down with coach and see the ways that we can affect the game a little different. Because right now they're watching us on these pick and rolls. We have to find a way for us to be better so we can help everybody else be better."
It is classic. I wish upper management could be asking these questions.
Answering. Yeah.
Answering these questions that are being asked, which are going to be, continue to be asked. And that's basically, you know, if you want to translate, that's Dwayne Wade saying upper management is thrown together a garbage group in many ways, at least a garbage fit.
A lot of these guys who are getting these minutes, you know, he's got Cameron Payne, Bobby Portis, all these guys that are, you know, getting a lot of minutes now after the trade are just not showing themselves to be ready for these minutes or worthy of getting these minutes. And it's just, and we need to talk about Cameron Payne, by the way.
We will. We certainly will. He's got 14 assists and 13 turnovers in 129 minutes since joining the Bulls, I believe, shooting just a hair over 38% from the field. You're out on him. Like you're out on the playoffs, you're out on him as the point guard of the future, it sounds like.
I mean, there's been no sign. It's not even just, oh, his shooting percentage isn't very good, but, you know, he's doing some good things on the floor. He's getting blown by on defense. He hasn't shown that he can really handle the ball or initiate the offense. I mean, sometimes and his shooting form, by the way, is really, really interesting to watch. It's like it's super slow. He has this really awkward release. It's almost Sean Marion-esque, except Sean Marion's shots went in and Cameron Payne don't.
Well, the purpose of a point guard, correct me if I'm wrong, is to largely make a lot of your teammates better and put your teammates in better positions to utilize their strengths.
What's Cameron Payne good at this point?
I don't know. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. And that's the most honest, blunt way to put it. Floaters, I guess, when he gets into the lane.
Well, great job. Great job.
But I don't think... I don't know what he does that truly makes a difference in a game in any way. And also, I don't see the signs where on other young point guards, you could see signs... They see the floor really well, for
right.
example, but maybe they don't have enough teammates who do run. And maybe that's still out there for Cameron Payne. But there's young guys who show flashes of really understanding the game of basketball, seeing angles in a way others wouldn't. It's things to give you hope, even if they're small and in a hard situation. There's just nothing about Cameron Payne's game that... suggests that to me. Like he's an undersized guy who's like a shooting guard on a team that calls him the point guard of the future.
He doesn't look like an NBA player right now, and I don't want to just completely write off his entire career. He's only in his second year and he hasn't gotten many minutes, but there's not a lot of reasons to be encouraged or reasons to feel like, you know, this is a guy that they got that, you know, wasn't doing well in Oklahoma City but is going to do well with more opportunities. He's had plenty of opportunities and he hasn't been good.
Should they send him to the D League?
Well, they should. I don't know why they aren't. And I actually asked Fred about this yesterday at practice. You know, because this is kind of, you know, this is something we've talked about. Obviously, they played 12 guys in the first 13 minutes against the Rockets the other day. And, you know, that's kind of been a topic of conversation lately, just how deep Hoiberg is going into the rotation, just kind of throwing stuff at the wall. I was half just asking him about this, but half also suggesting it a little bit yesterday at practice that... One thing that would make sense, the Bulls have a D-League team in the suburbs right now. Like, it's not that hard to send these guys to the D-League. So I think a thing
they've
that...
They done it with Portis and Valentine.
Right, they've done it with Portis Valentine. They did it with Zipser at one point. They did it with Jaren Grant a couple times.
Yeah.
If you have too many guys on the team, that they're these young guys that you want to get reps, but you're still trying to compete, and you can't really do that with this too big rotation where you're trying to play all these guys while also trying to win... One way to handle that would be to send a few of these guys, maybe like a Cameron Payne, Robbie Portis, whoever, down to the D League in order to get them some reps while also on a night-to-night basis, not having as many guys that Hoiberg is maybe under pressure to play on a night-to-night basis. And I asked Hoiberg if they were going to do that, and he said basically, well, you know, we've talked about it. He didn't really commit either way, but that's why you have a D League team. You have a D League team in order to help your guys get reps when they aren't in the rotation. You know, they have this. Like, why aren't they using this? Like, it makes no sense.
I think they've used the D-League team really well this year, to be honest. Like,
they could be doing more with it.
I thought Jaren Grant went down there, and he had a game-winning shot when he was down there, came back just with a little more confidence and rhythm, and we've seen him show a few flashes, specifically on offense here in the second half of the season. I thought Bobby Portis seemed a little motivated when he went down there, surprisingly. In his mind. And look, Zipser, he hasn't been good when it comes to being an efficient basketball player.
Right.
And he's been steady on defense at times, but he's not anywhere near an elite defender, so it's not like he's changing the game in that regard either. So, like, his play and, like, effect on a game kind of goes with what he doesn't control, and that's the rest of the game. Like, when they're playing well, he can fit in, but his deficiencies are obvious, too, when they're getting
right.
their butt kicked. But I thought the D-League has helped him out there. So I thought that's been okay. But yeah, like, campaign right now, it's weird because, I mean, Dwayne Wade's admitting this too, and he has another post-game quote here where he says, in regards to Fred Hoiberg, quote, I will defend him on this. This is a tough situation he's put in now. And on this Sunday, Hoiberg went with 11 players in the rotation early before it was a blowout, I think, or... It was kind of a blowout right away. Instead of 12, it seemed like, but still at the same time, like, Dwayne gets the hard situation he's in, and the campaign point you make, D-League's probably more his talent level right now, and that would help Fred out.
Can we talk about how bad of a sign it is when you're starting a point defending your coach with, I'll defend him on this?
Yeah, that's like, weird. That's weird.
That doesn't really project a lot of confidence overall.
And again, we're not there in case he says Dwayne Wade has handled this situation as well as he could.
Yeah, he's Dwayne Wade. He's a professional.
He always does. But, like, that is absolutely true, Sean. I will defend him on this.
That's not ideal.
There's a lot of things I'm not going to defend Fred on, guys. If you want to ask me about them, probably not going to tell you the answers yet, but off the record, I might tell you down the line.
Right.
It's one of those things. So
that's, speaking of kind of weird decisions that were made by Hoiberg, that were not necessarily surprising, but maybe a little surprising, Niko Mirotić out of the rotation again for the third game in a row, but this time he wasn't even active. He was placed on the inactive list. Isaiah Cannon was active, and Niko said some interesting stuff about his situation before the game. It just looks like his spirit is completely broken.
Yeah, and he's a guy that's always been...
he's been pretty honest.
His mentality's been questioned about whether he can keep confidence once he has it and whether he takes, you know, getting yanked around too hard and that affects his game. But, I mean, he kind of admitted this again, it seems like, Sean.
Yeah, so this is from a story from Nick Friedel of ESPN.com, who was in Boston for this game. Niko was asked before the game what the coaching staff has told him about why he's out of the rotation, and he says, "That's what I asked him. I asked him, what can I do to get back? What can I do to be in the rotation? What should I do differently? And it looks like he wanted to give an opportunity, a chance for a young guy who was on this team, Laverne. And I just need to be ready. He said maybe there will come a time when you have another chance. That's what I can do, work on myself and wait."
He seems confused again.
Yeah, it's not great. And then he also, he was asked, and this one is even more interesting, I would actually argue. He was asked at one point if he wishes the Bulls had traded him. He paused for several moments and said no. And then he says, "I came to Chicago because I wanted to play here. They drafted me. They did everything they were supposed to do. They waited for me. And for me, it was like another opportunity after the deadline. I was really focused, working hard on myself, being the first guy in the weight room, working on some extra shots, doing everything I was supposed to do to be ready. I was feeling much better on the floor, but this is the decision that they've made. It's been hard."
This is all the telltale signs of the Niko Mirotić era being over on, what, June 30th when the clock strikes midnight, the new league year starts, free agency opens. He'll be a restricted free agent. There's just nothing here. All the signs are pointing to Niko Mirotić being gone very quickly.
I have some questions about how this has been handled. Like, okay, so obviously Niko is out of the rotation.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even questioned. Like, I would maybe even, unless there's like a lot of injuries and they just need bodies, I might be surprised if he even plays again the rest of the season at this point. And it's,
really? I think he'll get back out there at some point.
Well,
this season's been way too weird in that sense.
Right.
Like, third day someone has a new role.
But here's the thing. Making him inactive in favor of Isaiah Cannon, like, I think that's the final nail in the coffin. Because it's not like he did it because, oh, you know, we really thought Isaiah Cannon could give us something. Isaiah Cannon was functionally a DNP in this game. He played the last 5 minutes of garbage time when the game was already decided, but whenever, you know, in the earlier parts of the game, he was not in the rotation. So it's like, and he's played a total of 2 minutes before tonight since the All-Star break. So it's like, you put Niko on the inactive list for a guy who hasn't been in the rotation, has no plans of being in the rotation, has no impact on the Bulls' future. That all that really does in terms of what it accomplishes is humiliates Niko publicly, which I have some questions about how that's handled.
Yeah, they put him on an active list in favor of their fifth point guard. Five.
Yeah.
Five. You don't need five. We've gone over this ad nauseum, I feel like, but you're correct that it embarrasses him, and that's a poor approach, again, to take on a guy who has struggled with confidence.
It's not a good look.
Speaking, it's no different from he's still sitting on the bench the whole game in a suit instead of warm-ups.
But it's just drawing attention to it, which I don't think is good for anybody.
Yeah, and well, I feel like it's just perfect karma that they scored 9 points in the first quarter and shot 3 of 22. And look, Niko hasn't shot nearly well enough to make a difference.
See, here's the thing.
But he's theoretically a shooter.
I'm not out here trying to argue that Niko has been treated unfairly in terms of being taken out of the rotation, because he's been bad, but just the way they're handling it doesn't make Niko look good, because he's been bad. Like, he's earned not being in the rotation. It doesn't make Fred look good for the inactive stuff, because that just, you know, publicly embarrasses him. It doesn't make the organization look good for investing so much in Niko that it's kind of come to this after he was competing for a starting spot in the training camp and was our starter for a lot of last year. Like, it just doesn't make anybody look good.
The story arc of Nico Maritich, and I'll go back when this podcast is over and look up his March 2015, some of those game dates, but we're almost exactly 2 years to the day or so when he crashed on the NBA scene with just a spectacular month in March 2015 near the end of his rookie year. And the sky, I mean,
he came in second.
I don't want to say the sky's the limit, but the future was so bright for him.
He came in second in Rookie of the Year voting that year to Andrew Wiggins.
That's true. That's a good point. And just the arc of his career, he was gift-wrapped that starting job from Fred Hoiberg in Hoiberg's rookie coaching season because Hoiberg believed in him so much in what he could be for the offense. And now, 2 years from when you really thought the Bulls had a frontline starter and consistent difference maker who fit the modern NBA scheme, the way the game's trending, and could be 15, 18 points per game score probably for them at a high efficient level, he's a DNP, and then he goes to being inactive on this game. And like you said, basically being embarrassed. And I don't remember... There's cases like this all the time in sports, but I don't remember much like this in Bulls history, to be honest. Something like that. I mean, Derrick Rose's thing was obviously a lot different with the knee injury and everything in that story arc, but it's just a bad look for the organization in this sense. And I don't know where the Bulls go from here. We said it's probably not rock bottom because they still have 16 more games of this,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And trust me, they can quit more so than this. Like, they're still all acting professionally and saying nice things, at least, or the proper things in the locker room. But this can get worse.
There's another month to go in the regular season. Exactly a month to the day. Today's March 12th. The last game of the regular season is April 12th.
Bulls seem like they're ready for to head south somewhere warm.
Have you seen, you remember that clip of the Denver Nuggets from a couple years ago in a timeout, like chanting 1, 2, 3, 6 more weeks?
Yeah.
That kind of feels like where the Bulls are at this point. It hasn't gotten that obvious yet, but, you know, I don't think anybody feels like they, I don't think anybody except for like maybe a couple of the young guys who want to be in the playoffs, like I don't think any of these guys are going to be too upset if they miss the playoffs.
Can we ask this question? So they're trying to weigh competing for the playoffs with player development.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really developing players now. Right?
They're not accomplishing either of their goals. They're 0-2.
I mean, they're really bad. I guess it's player development in the sense that they're out there, and part of player development is getting minutes in NBA games against good competition, against bad competition,
right,
whoever it is. But, I mean, it's really, really hard to look at this game today and say, oh, you know, Campaign, he really developed today, or Jaren Grant really took that next step. You know what I mean? Like, Jaren Grant played 9 minutes and 28 seconds. He's starting, and you can go out there and still count his minutes on sometimes one hand, sometimes two hands. That's the way it is.
Hey, like, Denzel Valentine, 3 of 6 from 3-point range tonight.
Well, okay, I guess that
that's
is...
That's one thing.
I guess that's progress. That's player development at its finest.
There
that's
you go.
All you can take out of this trip to Boston. And again, like, I mean, Dwayne Wade, there's some more comments here.
More?
From Casey Johnson. He said that Dwayne said, quote, "My job is to play. I have to be better on the basketball floor. Like I said, just running pick and rolls all game, that ain't it." So this seems to me like Dwayne Wade also saying, I don't even like the style of basketball we're playing out there right now. Like, I don't like what the coaching decisions that are being made in the approach to strategy as well. You know what I mean?
The "my job is to play," that's something that he's thrown out like the last couple, because after the Houston game the other day, he said,
"I don't wear a suit."
He's like, "I don't wear a suit. I wear a jersey. I have a locker." Like, that's basically some pretty good shade at both Hoiberg for some of these rotations and the front office for the roster they put together. Like, Wade is too much of a professional to directly throw a lot of these guys under the bus, but, like, you can pretty clearly read between the lines and see what he's talking about. And it's hard to disagree with him, by the way. Like, I'm not mad at Wade for saying any of this
stuff. I don't disagree with any of it either. Like, he's doing... I mean, we should start saying, maybe the silver lining of these last 16 games just completely go awry is that maybe Dwayne Wade just doesn't want to come back, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, when Dwayne says, so we got to we should point out, like, he's on record saying, what, family, money, and the state of the Bulls will be the three factors in his decision-making. And we know his family loves it here. They're not going to be in Miami. They do like it here. And we know the money, nearly $24 million next year.
He's not getting that anywhere else.
Is as good as he can find. So can the state of the Bulls become such a disaster that it overrides the other two factors and Dwayne Wade decides to leave? When you would have, 2 months ago, a month ago, I would have said, and I think we did talk about this on the podcast, we thought he's more likely to stay in Chicago again and exercise the player option next year than he is to leave Chicago. When he makes comments like this, to me, that's him inching closer to the state of the Bulls is so disastrous, maybe I do need to leave.
If you can get Dwayne Wade to walk away from a guaranteed $24 million after the whole reason he signed with you was because he felt like Pat Riley was disrespecting him with his offer, that's like an impressive accomplishment by Bulls management.
That'd be one of the most impressive accomplishments they've had in the past few years.
There aren't very many to choose from, but like that would be up there.
I'm just trying to imagine this alternate universe where after the game, the Bulls look awful. And Dwayne wants upper management to answer questions, so all the players leave and they stop talking to the media, and every game it's just us asking Gar Forman and John Paxson. So what player development did you see tonight? Did you like the way Fred yanked around Jaren Grant's minutes again? Do you think this is helping Jaren get confidence and growth and just literally ask them all the questions you would of a coach that you don't get the answers out of?
Well, you have to remember that they don't see the Doug McDermott trading 5 picks for him as a failure because they got Cameron Payne out of it, and that's somebody they were very high on in the draft.
This is absolutely a disastrous trade for the Bulls. And I know we've been going a little while here, and there's always so much to break down the Bulls. This is probably a bigger conversation, too. But Taj Gibson leaving, not just the defense he brought and in the consistency he brought. Like, you could count on him for, what, 12-7 every night. And
he was such a steady presence in that locker room, too.
He was, and he was another person instead of Jimmy and Dwayne to answer questions that Dwayne's getting annoyed by, for one thing. And I'll tell you this. If Taj Gibson was out there, we'd be asking a lot fewer, did the Bulls quit, questions. Because when Taj was out there, you never confused...
Taj is never going to quit.
You never confused any unit with Taj out there as quitting, because he always played his butt off in Chicago. And I think that had an infectious presence on whatever unit he was out there. Usually the starting lineup, obviously. But when him and Robin Lopez were running over people and the Bulls were missing shots, you didn't have to ask these questions that question the Bulls' heart. You know what I mean? So the idea of Bobby Portis getting more minutes was good with Taj gone. And again, I think Bobby's at the stage where he has to play these minutes to develop. There's only so much D-League and practice reps that's going to help Bobby. Right. So again, I do understand that. I think Bobby's obviously more advanced than Cameron Payne at this stage, where Payne, like we mentioned, could benefit from
Right, because Bobby's D-League had good games. He's been inconsistent, but he's had good games.
He's Payne had a good month as a rookie. Yeah. Like a really good month. There when he kind of crashed onto the scene.
By the way, tonight, shortly before the end of this game, Taj tweeted SMH. I'm not sure whether that was about him watching the Bulls or if it was just about USC's seed in the tournament.
Yeah, I think it was USC because they're playing in one of the first four games. So they're one of the final four teams in the tournament that has to work their way into the actual Thursday-Friday by winning one game. For the NCAA, it's another money grab by the NCAA. Hold a few more games, but that's probably it, but it's fun to think about. Taj maybe was flipping through Bulls Celtics and I was like, shaking my head.
I wonder if they miss me.
You know, the Bulls really miss Taj Gibson's professionalism and hustle and heart, because they had none of it on this Sunday in Boston. Again, the Bulls, 31-35. They are a sinking ship right now. Don't know how they stop it and fix it. 10 spot in the East, not looking bright. They play the Hornets on the road on Monday night. We'll watch that and have a Locked On Bulls podcast for you after that game. As always, follow Sean on Twitter at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlin. Locked On Bulls is on Twitter and Facebook. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Advertising inquiries, always welcome. send us your questions too, and we'll get to them here soon enough. If you want some big picture stuff, we can always keep those in the hopper. Most of all, though, please subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a review, preferably a 5-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe also, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got Locked On NBA, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On Fantasy Football, Locked On NFL Draft, with the draft coming up. All 30 NBA teams, all 32 NFL teams, they all have their own Locked On podcast. So tune into Locked On Bulls next time. Thanks for listening.